Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Miketz Chamishi, the fifth Aliyah in Parshas Miketz. The topic of our Aliyah is bringing back Binyamin. It is a longer Aliyah of 35 psukim, running from Perek Mem Beis Yotes to Mem Gimel Tes Vov. So let's take a look at a brief overview and then we'll jump straight into some points to ponder. So we're in the middle of the conversation here. Yosef has now just released the brothers from a 3-day prison sentence, and he says, if you really want to prove your truth, you're now going to, I'm going to send you back. You're going to give you the food necessary, but the next time you appear in front of me, you need to bring your youngest brother, and then you can verify your claims. While this is going on, the brothers start talking among themselves, clearly in Hebrew, not in Egyptian, and they say, Aval Asheimim Anachnu, we are guilty over our brother because we saw the pain and he begged us and we didn't listen to him, and that's why this is happening to us. And Reuven then chimes in and says, I said to you that you should not sin by this child and you didn't listen to me. Now his blood is being avenged. And they didn't realize that Yosef is actually listening because he can understand Hebrew, because they believe that the interpreter is in between them and he cannot understand Hebrew. And he goes out to cry, and then he comes back and he takes Shimon from them as a hostage, puts them into prison, and then orders that their sacks be filled with the produce, and he returns also their money to their sacks as well, and off they go, they take their donkeys, and when they are at the Malon, when they are at the inn, where they're staying on the way back to Canaan, one of the brothers opens up his sack, sees their money is buried in it, and they all check, and they find that the same is true, and they become very scared, because now they realize that they're going to be implicated for stealing as well. They come back to Yaakov and they tell him the whole story. They tell him about this person who starts to deal with us in a very difficult manner. And he asks them where they come from. And then he says that this test that you have to bring your brother and you have to bring your youngest brother to prove your story as well. And then they tell about how they found also their money as well. And Yaakov Vinu says, I see Shekaltem, you've made me bereft. Yosef's no longer, Shimon's no longer, now you want Binyamin. I'm suffering for all of this. This terrible, terrible feeling, Yaakov says. So Reuven jumps straight in and says, Eshnei bonai tomis, im lo yavienu elecha. He says, you know what, I'll kill my own two children, says Reuven, if I don't bring Binyamin back to you. To Noah sal yodiv ani ashivenu elecha, give him to me and I'll return him. And Yaakov responds, no, I will not send Binyamin. Something that may happen to him and that will kill me. I'm going to die in grief. I will not do that. So in the meantime, the famine wears its way on. They start finishing their supplies. And Yaakov turns to his children. He says, go down to Egypt and perhaps you can get it for us more. Yehuda says, we can't. We're not allowed to go down if we don't have our younger brother. And he says, if you allow us to take Binyamin, that's wonderful. If not, we cannot go down. And then Yehuda makes a very strong statement. Because Yaakov says to him, why is it that you even told him you had another brother? And they explain, we didn't. We didn't think that. How would we know that he would ask for him? So Yehuda comes in and he says, I will take your Binyamin. I'll take personal responsibility. You can ask him from my hand. And if I do not, I have sinned to you for all days. That, as Rashi explains, is this world and the next world. But he says, but that's what we need to do. Yaakov Avinu relents. Yisrael, is he's called now, relents. And he says, take mizimras ha'aretz bichlehem, take a mincha, take a few spices, a little bit of honey, all kinds of nuts, and give them double money and return money from last time, and go to this man, and Hashem should give you mercy in front of this man to send back your brother and Binyamin. And Kasher Shakalti Shakalti, as I've been bereft. Yaakov Avinu is already trying to rationalize the idea of losing his children already. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And off they go. They go down and they go down to Egypt with Binyamin to go in front of Yosef. Very, very painful Aliyah to read. So a few basic points to ponder is, why is it that when the brothers arrive at the conclusion that they are ashamim, that they are guilty at this point in time, what triggers that? So the Racham HaKadosh explains that they already had justified selling Yosef. They felt that Yosef was a threat to their lives, to their way of life, and they had really judged him in a basedin among themselves that he was liable for death. So it's not that they're reconsidering that judgment. What they're saying is that although it was true that we judged him for death and we were merciful to sell him, we were still callous in not listening to his pleas and his cries. That was inappropriate, and that inappropriateness is what we're being punished for now. The Orach Haim actually explains that the fact that the ruler told them one of them must stay in captivity and they need to give over one of them to be put into prison triggered this memory of what happened beforehand, of them throwing one of their brothers into prison in order to gain their safety. And they realize this is really speaking to them. Rav Hirsch points out that the word Asham or Ashemim is going to later on in Chumash and Parshas Vayikra be what's called a Korban Asham, a guilt offering. And a guilt offering, the word Ashem or Asham, is going to be the feeling of all the rationales a person makes, the justifications, falling flat. After 20 years, they rationalized and explained their actions and why they needed to do this, even though Yaakov Avinu was crying and it was painful for him. But after these 20 years now, finally, in an inescapable way, they realize that it was dishonest. And that's why they say Ashenimim. That's what the Korban Asham is all about. Now, Soloveitchik explains that that's why in the Vidui service, what is said in some Nusrois after the Tefillah, after the Shemona Esrei, what's said in the Slichos and on Yom Kippur, the beginning of that is Aval Anachnu V'Avosenu Chatonu, but we and our forefathers have sinned. That comes from this pasuk, aval. The aval is but, meaning to say, after all is said and done, and after all of the explaining and the rationalizing and the justifying that we've made in our lives, in the end of the day, it doesn't add up. It's not honest. It's not honest. And when we have to keep explaining it to ourselves, the more we have to explain, the more it isn't honest. That's what the realization they're arriving at as well. Now, why is it that he takes Shimon out of all the brothers? Well, he explains that Shimon was the oldest of the children of Leah who was involved in the sale. Reuven already extracted himself from this, and he was the one who had said to Levi that we're going to do this, and ultimately throws him into the pit in the prison. And so he is now thrown into the pit as well. This is part of the atonement, sort of moving back into the idea of the Kleakor we looked at last Aliyah. Why does Yosef return the money? So the Hayamek Dover explains that this just deepens the plot, because now they can be indicted for stealing as well. They become much more vulnerable now because of this. Yosef has much more leverage on them as they return, which is why they are fearful. Now, what's this business with Reuven's suggestion with his two sons? It seems to be self-defeating to kill his two sons. Why would that be his suggestion? Ibn Ezra explains that it wasn't that he was going to kill them. He was going to punish them. He says, you know, I will exact punishment on my children if I don't bring back your two children, Yaakov. Another explanation he suggests is that perhaps this is a prayer. He's saying, Hashem, please don't allow this to happen, that I would have to lose my two children for the sake of losing my father's two children as well. Different ways to try to explain what you're saying. The Malbim is saying, it's just his way of saying that he'll take responsibility for the two sons of Yaakov like the two sons of his own. Now, Ayim Ekdobar has a little bit of different perspective where he says that Reuven feels that since he was not part of the Mechira, he has more of a capacity to be able to succeed in his mission. After all, he was not one of the people who sold the brothers. He's not telling his father that, but he feels that he has the wherewithal to succeed more, even though it seems that the way he words his suggestion is quite jarring. So what is Yehuda's promise, and why is it that Yehuda's promise is taken more seriously by Yaakov Avinu as well? So first we should notice is that this idea of Yehuda taking responsibility is a huge moment of growth, because we've seen Yehuda at a much lower stage in his life when he sort of shirked all responsibility in terms of relationships, at least when he was with Tamar, and it became much more of a complex time. This taking responsibility is him taking his life and his leadership much more responsibly. That's a very big change. The Ramban says the reason why Yehuda was more believed, or Yaakov Avinu took him more seriously, is for two reasons. One is that Reuven had already displayed his dishonesty by switching his beds, whereas Yehuda had come a full circle in terms of his own responsibility in his own life. And number two is that Yehuda did not come to Yaakov Avinu in the heat of the moment. The heat of the moment is when Yaakov, at the very beginning, when they come back and they tell the whole story, that's when Reuven makes his suggestion about his two sons and taking Binyamin. That's not the right time. It wasn't omeid al haperek, as they say. It wasn't necessary to deal with that right now. You would have waited until the opportune moment when the Yaakovinu's back is against the wall, so to speak, as well. It is interesting to note that the Gemara in Makos on Daf Yud Aleph Beis tells us that when a person does a nidui al tnai, makes a very serious curse on condition, and the condition doesn't come to fruition, still there's a danger in that curse being fulfilled. And so that's why the Gemara says that for the 40 years in the desert, Yehuda's bones were rattling in the coffin. That means they were not accessing Olam Haba. And the reason was because he says these words, "V'chatasi l'cha kol hayomim," I've sinned to you against you, my father, all days. All days refers to Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, this world and the next world. So even though he did bring back Binyamin, these are very serious words and they had ramifications. I'd like to point out that the words of Reuven also had ramifications, even though Reuven did not end up taking Binyamin under his wing and responsibility. Turin points out that the gematria of Eshnei, when he says, I'm going to kill my two children, that's the gematria of Dasan and Aviron. which are the two people who will die, in fact, in the future, and Reuven's words will be fulfilled with them as well. Now, finally, why is it that Yaakov suggests bringing a mincha back? Why is that his way, his solution to going back to Yosef? So Rav Sorotzkin points out that he's already displayed these two methodologies in crisis mode before, and when meeting with Yaakov in Parshas Vayishlach, we see that he sent a mincha and he prays to Hashem. There's no war; he can't make war against Egypt at this point in time. But he does do the mincha, which is his mincha and tefillah to Hashem, because in order to do this, in fact, you'll notice that the three spices he sends, tzori, nechos, and not, which are balsam, spices, and myrrh, are the same spices that the traders of Yosef had when we're trading when they sold him down to Egypt. So it may be without intent, perhaps with a little bit of ruach hakodesh, also a kapara for the sin of Yosef as well. Rav Hirsch also points out that when it says lifnei ha'ish, when it says that he's going to bring this mincha in front of the man, it may also be a reference to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Almighty. And what essentially is being said over here is, in the end of the day, that it's all in the hands of Hashem. Yes, we're going to deal with this official, this very difficult official that you've been dealing with, the master of Egypt, but I'm sending my mincha, so to speak, in front of Ha'ish, in front of Hashem, because maybe Hashem will have rachamim as well. So Yaakov is pivoting this upwards, which may explain the terminology mincha, which is also a sacrifice, not just a gift as well. With this, we close the fifth aliyah. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.